This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Sorry about my voice today. I'm just recovering from a cold. A new report by NARAL Pro-Choice America has found a disturbing spike in verbal and physical violence aimed at abortion clinics nationwide, and its links to anti-abortion rhetoric from politicians as well as doctored videos by anti-abortion activists. Here are some examples from the report. In 2014, there were 91 instances reported of online hate speech, but in 2015, there were 25,839. In 2014, there was one death threat or threat of harm. In 2015, there were 94. Recent comments by Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump about punishing women who get abortions is also part of the problem, as is candidate Ted Cruz's vehement opposition to women's reproductive rights. My guest is James Owens. He is the state's communications director at NARAL Pro-Choice America. Welcome to Rising Up, James.
Hey, Sonali, great to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, tell us a little bit about the study. Now, your organization has been studying these and keeping track of sort of hate crime related and abuse, verbal and physical abuse, for a very, very long time, linked to women's reproductive choices, right?
That's correct. And first at the top, this was a study that was actually put together by the National Abortion Federation, NAF, and they've been working with us for years tracking this type of violence and threats against clinic. And they put together this report this year, and it outlined the alarming trends that you just outlined, from increased hate speech online to increase actual incidents of violence at clinics and aimed at women who are seeking reproductive health care at these clinics. And while we have been monitoring this for a very long time, the spike that we have seen just in the last year has been very alarming and cause for concern. And frankly, when you look about for reasons why there might be this spike in just the last few months, we have to start considering that the increasing use of violent rhetoric on the part of some in the political sphere must have some link to these alarming increase in threats against women and those who are providing reproductive health care.
Right. So, and I mentioned a few of them. I mean, there were the doctored videos where anti-abortion activists had stealth conversations with Planned Parenthood officials, taped them, and then edited the videos. And then, of course, we have political rhetoric from politicians like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. And in fact, let's actually play an excerpt of Donald Trump's media appearance. This was very recent. So this was just in the last couple of weeks, where Trump discussed punishing women who have abortions.
Against, I am pro-life, yes.
What is banned? How do you ban abortion? How do you actually do it?
Well, you know, you'll go back to a position like they had, where people will perhaps go to illegal places.
Yeah.
But you have to ban it.
They go to somebody who flunked out of medical school.
Are you Catholic?
Yes, I think.
How do you feel about the Catholic Church's position?
I accept the teaching authority of my church on moral issues.
But do you know their position on abortion?
Yes, I do.
And do you concur with that position?
I concur with their moral position, but legally, I get to the question. Here's my problem.
No, but let me ask you, but what do you say about...
It's not funny.
...your church? Yeah, it's really not a funny thing. What do you say about your church? They're very, very strong.
They're allowed to, but the churches make their moral judgments, but you running for president of the United States will be chief executive of the United States. Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
10 years,
I don't
what?
Know. That I don't know. That
Why
I don't
not?
Know. I don't
you
know.
You take positions on everything else.
I do take positions on everything else. It's a very complicated position.
And that's Donald Trump in a recent media appearance. James, how detrimental is such rhetoric when he talks about punishing women for having abortions and banning abortions? How detrimental is this rhetoric?
Well, you know, it really sets the tone not only for how he's running his campaign and how he expects his supporters to talk and act, but it sets a tone for what we might imagine a Trump White House would look like. You know, the best test for running for president is how you run your campaign. And if this is how he's not only talking about women, but talking about issues that affect women while running for president, I think everyone needs to be very concerned about how that attitude would translate to how he makes decisions in the Oval Office. We've seen at Trump rallies for now several months, the way his rhetoric from the lectern translates into a mob-like mentality in the crowd, how increasing rates of violence have been seen at his rallies. And you can tie that to Trump standing up at the front of the room, egging these folks on. And I think we can draw the same correlation between the spread of violent rhetoric from not only Trump, but also hateful rhetoric used by the folks like David Daleiden, who are putting out these doctored videos to try to agitate people and using misleading information to try to limit women's reproductive health options. And so I think, you know, the tone that is set at the top from both Donald Trump's and Ted Cruz, but also to the folks who are leading the charge to limit reproductive health choices in America, is very important and bears a causal link with some of the increase in inflammatory rhetoric we've seen across the social sphere.
And I'm glad you brought up David Daleiden as well. I mean, he's considered like this poster child of the anti-abortion movement here in California, actually, and where he's now butting heads with State Attorney General Kamala Harris. And you know, it's kind of disturbing to see like young people like this man involved in this movement, and also inspiring not just hate speech online, but actual violence. So let's go back to the report. I mentioned some statistics about the shocking jump in hate speech online. What are some other statistics that you can share with us that, that the report came out with?
Well, I think you hit the top lines right on the nose, and that this report from the National Abortion Federation really makes clear that not only are we seeing a spike in the numbers of these incidents, but we're seeing a spike in a very narrow time frame. And that's a very key finding for this report. Of course, year to year, there are always fluctuations in the amount of online hate speech and the amount of threats and acts of violence directed against clinics and people in the general public. But to see it in such a short window is really something we haven't seen before. And when you mentioned that there have been over 25,000 instances of online hate speech that this report documents in just the past year, that is a dramatic increase. And we're seeing particular instances where providers, where folks who are involved in medical profession are being called out publicly and online for their choice of career and for choosing to provide reproductive health services to American women. And so it's taking this constitutionally protected right, the right to access abortion, and it's trying to call people out publicly in a way to shame them publicly. And the effect of that is not only to shame the providers and to, as we've seen, endanger their safety and their livelihood, but also to shame the women who follow, who require their services. And so this is part of a very broad and I might say deliberate effort by not only the Center for Medical Progress and David Daleiden, but the conservative movement more generally, part of a very concerted effort to take what is a constitutionally protected right and try to make it non-existent through shaming women and providers, but also through enacting abortion restrictions, eyes of trying to do right by women's medical interests. So this, as alarming as the spike is very much an outgrowth of a deliberate attack to limit Americans' reproductive rights.
And, you know, just going back to that horrific video of Donald Trump so glibly saying that we should punish women. For honestly, like, to hear a man sitting there and talking about punishing women is outrageous. But he also acknowledges in the beginning of the video that when you ban abortions, women will resort to other ways to abort their pregnancies or terminate their pregnancies if those pregnancies are not going to work out for them. And, you know, is that also not another fallout from not just the rhetoric, but the actual policies on the ground that are resulting in the shutting down of clinics?
Yeah, and that's a really perceptive point, because we've seen historically and across the world, that when you ban abortion, you don't stop women from seeking abortions, and that it simply forces them to provide, to pursue what would be a legal means to access this important health care that they otherwise would have access to. And I think, you know, what we saw with Donald Trump's comments and what we've seen with some of the comments from other people in his movement is not a change in policy, but a change in rhetoric. We've seen, perhaps because of the inflamed passions of the presidential race, they're not, the conservative movement is not changing their approach to limiting women's reproductive health options or trying to ban abortion, but they've become emboldened to talk about the consequences of it. And so, you know, Donald Trump has been very forthright with his, what he calls pro-life views, his anti-choice views. He's been very honest about wanting to defund and shut down Planned Parenthood. So has Ted Cruz. And the fact that they are now talking about the natural outgrowth of that rhetoric, what happens when we ban abortion? Well, it makes those who seek abortions seek an illegal action. And that really, that change in rhetoric is kind of the most, you know, it's the most interesting part here, because last year they had the exact same positions. They were trying to ban abortion and limit people's access to reproductive health choices. This year they have the exact same positions, but are simply using more inflammatory rhetoric. And not only is that alarming, but it also is having these consequences of other people adopting this inflammatory rhetoric. And as this report makes clear, there's a very direct line between the use of this inflammatory rhetoric and the increase in instances of violence and threats against clinics. I mean, the one thing that this report makes clear is that there were zero murders at reproductive health clinics in 2014. In 2015, there were three. There were zero attempted murders at these clinics in 2014. In 2015, there were nine. The line between the increasingly violent rhetoric and the deceptive practices being used by these anti-choice groups and the violence and threats of violence that women and healthcare providers are enduring at these clinics is very clear and is something that the conservative anti-choice movement needs to confront more directly.
And so your organization, NARAL Pro-Choice America, took these results from the National Abortion Federation and wrote a letter to the Republican National Committee. What did you tell the RNC? What are you asking for the RNC to do? Because, of course, the RNC essentially has an anti-abortion position.
That's correct. And, you know, I think when our president wrote to the chairman of the RNC, Reince Priebus, and to the head of the other Republican campaign committees for Senate, House, and governorships, we're very honest by saying, look, we change your mind on whether or not women should be able to access constitutionally protected reproductive health care. But today we're using this stark report to ask you to put those differences aside and get your candidates to be more conscious of the effect of effects of the rhetoric that they're using, that we might not be able to agree on whether or not women should be able to access safe and legal abortion, but we ought to all, as Americans, be able to agree that increasing rates of violence towards health providers and women in this country is not an acceptable outcome, and that to the extent to which the violent rhetoric has incited this, it's incumbent upon all political leaders, including those at the top of the party, like RNC Chair Reince Priebus, to take a leadership role here and to condemn the violent rhetoric when it crops up. Unfortunately, to this point, we have seen the opposite. We have seen many leaders in the anti-choice movement and anti-choice politicians supportive of this violent rhetoric. We've seen them using it in fundraising appeals. We've seen them deploying it on the stump and really adding to the very volatile atmosphere in this political environment. And unfortunately, this report details the natural consequences of that.
Now, you also raised the issue of, in that letter, Robert Deer, the Colorado man who attacked a clinic shouting something about baby parts as he did it. I mean, this perhaps was the ultimate violent reaction to these doctored videos, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the shooting at the Colorado Springs Planned Parenthood Clinic makes clear that this rhetoric is reaching its intended audience. When the accused murderer, Robert Deere, gets up and spouts the exact same talking points that David DeLayden and others in the anti-choice movement have been using to spread deception, to spread misleading information about reproductive health care in this country, you know, we have to sit up and take notice. These aren't mere talking points that are rattled off on Sunday talk shows. These are words that carry very particular meaning and that are causing people to act based upon that meaning. And that's why Narol thought it was very important to reach out to leaders in the Republican Party to get them to take a leadership role and condemn this violent rhetoric, because we've seen that it fuels violent actions.
Did you get a response?
We're still awaiting the response.
Well, give out a website where our audience can find out more about the report and also about the work of Narol Pro-Choice America.
Absolutely. Well, you can always go to prochoiceamerica.org, where we have all of our resources. NARAL is a very large national organization with a million member activists across the country. And we have information from every state in the country about the status of reproductive freedoms in that state. We also are very closely monitoring elections on both the federal and state level to be able to give Americans information on what the people who want to be their leaders are saying about choice and where they stand in terms of defending reproductive freedom. This report, again, by the National Abortion Federation, is a very important part of that effort in holding leaders accountable for their rhetoric and for their positions. And the National Abortion Federation is really to be commended for putting this together and making it public.
And we'll post a link to both the report as well as prochoiceamerica.org from our site later today. James, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
James Owens is the state's communications director at NARAL Pro-Choice America. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.